This is episode 54 of the Next Year Now podcast.
Hi, I'm Christine McAllister, entrepreneur and business coach at Life with Passion. If you want to replace your income and quit or stay out of that job you hate so you can create the job you love, then you need to listen to the Next Year Now podcast with my friend Tom Hefner.
What I try to do is adopt what I like about another process and try to integrate it with what I want to do.
Welcome to the Next Year Now podcast with Tom Hefner. Tom believes that if you really want to thrive at work and in life, then every day purposeful habits and practices are vital. The Next Year Now podcast will not only help you identify and integrate these habits into your daily life, but also bring you key insights and lessons from some of the most successful people in their fields. And here is your host, Tom Hefner.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast devoted to helping you thrive at work and in life. The topic of habits and practices is always front and center in our discussion, but we also explore how we use these habits and practices to improve our personal development, productivity, creativity, health and well-being, business, and entrepreneurship. Today's guest, Jim Wang, is a personal finance blogger and one of the best in the business when it comes to showing you how to get ahead financially. That's why I'm so excited about our chat today. In our conversation, I asked Jim to discuss his most effective money management habit, why it's so hard for so many of us to save and achieve financial independence, his best ideas for where we should invest our money right now, book recommendations to help us become our own money management experts, and so much more. Jim Wang is a serial entrepreneur. Working as a software developer in the DoD industry, he founded a personal finance blog that went on to be featured in the New York Times and Business Week. And before leaving that blog, Bargaineering, to start another entrepreneurial venture, he saw it valued at seven figures. Since then, Jim has launched several other startups, including a meal plan service, a deal curation site, DealsOn, and his wildly successful website, Wallet Hacks. And what I love about Wallet Hacks is that it's a blog about money that, get this, isn't boring and will help you actually achieve financial independence with a minimum of wasted effort. And that's really important because so many how-to sites and guides nowadays are just full of time wasters. Jim's approach is really a throwback to the fundamentals. Everything he's done, every problem he's solved, it's all about breaking it down to its component steps. And today, Jim's going to keep it simple with us too, and give us the best habits, practices, and tips for money management and financial independence. Oh, and if you're looking for credibility, then this is absolutely the guy for you to listen to. He's been featured in the New York Times, like I said earlier, the Motley Fool investing website, Marketplace, Entrepreneur, Business Week, US News, Kiplinger, Forbes, and one of my personal favorites, Yahoo Finance. Jim, thank you for being here today, and welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks, Tom. That was a very glowing introduction. I started getting red and felt a little embarrassed. I'm like, I want to meet this guy. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
Look, I know you're just as stoked as I am to learn about money management and habits to help us achieve financial independence. It's why we're here today. So let's just dive right into this conversation. Jim, here's the thing about money management that's truly vexing for me. There are so many people that work in this space, financial managers, coaches, accountants, authors, bloggers. It feels like there's a million people devoted to helping us manage our money better. Like, how do we know who and what advice to follow?
So that's a really good question. I don't know if I could speak to the financial managers, coaches, accountants, and all that. But when it comes to authors and bloggers, and I guess it really applies to the others too. With so many voices, like, it can sound like there's a lot of noise. But what I like to do is, even though I am one of those bloggers, is I will read everything and kind of pick and choose the stories and the advice that resonates with me. Because I think at the end of the day, we all know what we should be doing. It's a question of figuring it out and how to get it to fit our daily lives. And that just requires, like so many other things, just to go through all that noise to find, you know, the notes that really sing to you.
Well, with so many experts giving advice in the financial space, you would think that we would all be saving money really well. And like you said, we all know what we should be doing and at some level. But I think the irony is that we're terrible at saving money. I mean, when I tell you this, Jim, you probably know this already, but we're epically bad at it. I had Farnoosh Torabi on the show previously, and we were discussing a terrifying statistic. I mean, truly terrifying. And she said that more than 60% of Americans have less than $1,000 in savings, which is crazy. So why is it then, with so much advice, and if we know this on some level, why is it that we struggle to save money?
Because life gets in the way. Well, you know, we all know you shouldn't eat more calories than you burn. You shouldn't. There are a ton of things that we know we shouldn't be doing, but we do it anyway because, I mean, life. You should be saving money, but how often do you look in your bank account and think, oh, well, if I had an emergency, you know, how would I pay for it? You probably don't think in most people, I don't know about you, most people don't think in those terms on a daily basis. They may do it when they do, you know, a financial review, if they do it like once a year, maybe if they're really good, you know, once a quarter, every 6 months, things like that. The problem is that, you know, you go to work, you have the stresses of work. If you're going to spend your energy anywhere, shouldn't it be, you know, trying to, you know, get a promotion, get a raise, earn more at your job? And so you have that, then you layer on top of those stresses. If you have a family, a spouse, you have children, they have needs and demands, you have to try to meet those too. And you layer on everything in life. And on top of that, you're supposed to periodically think about how much you're saving. Like, you're trying to make it through life. And so we know what we're supposed to do. Like, people aren't overweight because they don't realize that calories, you know, add weight to their body if they don't expend it during the day or during the whatever. It's because you can't juggle all these things and expect to be able to do them all. And so the advice is good. We know what we should be doing. The question is, how do we get ourselves to do it? And so with Wallet Hacks, what I try to do is my articles, you know, it's very much focused on the tactical, how to save, you know, how to save automatically, how to review things on a regular basis so that, you know, you aren't so stuck in the muck that you forget the bigger picture. But on the other side, you need a little bit of that inspiration, because that's sort of like the candy that keeps you going. Mm-hmm. And it's a gentle reminder rather than a, you know, forceful condemnation of whatever you're doing, right? We're saying you want to be able to handle the emergencies that happen in life without putting yourself into a deeper hole. But you want to be able to explain it in a way that doesn't make you feel bad that you don't have enough in an emergency fund. That helps no one, right? If you attack anybody for anything, they're going to shut down. But if you urge them and say, hey, this is what life could look like if you had an emergency fund, it's inspirational. And on some hand, if you don't need that, it feels fluffy. But when you're like stuck and you don't know what to do, that's like someone reaching their hand out to help you up. And, you know, you can get up on your own if you have the energy, but that hand really just gets you moving in the right direction. I think we struggle because we're just stuck in the mud.
Yeah, well, as somebody who is both of us that have kids, I can definitely appreciate the life getting in the way. Well, let's pull the thread on this a little bit more, Jim. You know, if you think back on your experience, both as an entrepreneur, but also as somebody that this is what you live, breathe, and eat every day in terms of wallet hacks, and you're reading about this stuff, you're sharing the best content with us, you're sharing the best ideas. Can you share with us maybe the top two or three habits or practices that we can adopt today to save more and hopefully achieve financial independence?
I am a huge fan of tracking things, whether it's maintaining a budget or tracking your time or whatever. You know, I forget who said it, but he was really famous. Like, whatever gets managed gets improved. Whatever gets tracked gets improved.
What gets measured gets managed. Peter Drucker, one of my favorite authors and just thought leaders of all time.
I knew you'd get that. I knew you'd pick me up based on my memory. But it's hugely important because we think we're on top of things. But we aren't, because obviously, like I said before, life gets in the way. If you aren't budgeting, you're not saving as much as you can. If you're not intentional in where you're spending and how you're earning money, you can't possibly be maximizing either one of them. And so I don't think you need two or three habits. You need one overarching idea, which is if you want to improve something, you have to track it, whether it's how much you save, how much you earn. I mean, if you want something super tactical, how many people have a cable bill where they're paying, you know, 100 whatever a month for a bazillion channels, none of which you watch? We're all watching Netflix or Amazon Prime or whatever it is. And that's all on demand on the internet. Just take out a journal, just a notebook or a sheet of paper. Honestly, it's not going to fill up more than a sheet of paper. And for the next week, track how much live TV you watch. You'll be like shocked at how little I was shocked at how little I watched, because I don't watch at all. And how much you're paying for something you don't use at all. You're paying a rental fee for a box for a service that you're not even using. And if you track it, then you'll know, okay, my decision is, do I want to pay $120 a month to watch one episode of whatever each week, or do I want to cancel it? And I can pay for it on demand, or pay for it, you know, on Amazon Prime Video, and save yourself a ton of money. And that gives you more information, since you're tracking it, to decide and not be fearful of like, oh, I'm going to miss some show, or I don't know if I'm going to miss it. Track it, and it'll save you a lot of money and time.
I think that's the reason why we still have cable from the Olympics, because I kept telling my wife, we can't get rid of the, the cable. I need to watch the Olympics. And if I think about how much I actually watched versus over time since then, that's a really good, a good experiment to run. I'm going to be running that this week.
Yeah. You'll be amazed, and then you'll feel bad that you didn't do this sooner. And then I'll tell you that it's better to do it now than to do it in a year, right? You know, the old Chinese adage, the best time to plant a tree was 20 or 40 years ago. The next best time is today.
That's right. I like that. Jim, I interviewed Dory Clark for the show a while back, and you know, unfortunately, the audio was totally hosed. So, you know, if you're listening right now and you're thinking, "Well, I don't remember that episode," well, that's the reason why, because the audio got hosed. So I need to go back and re-interview her. But something she said really stood out to me, and she talked about the importance for every single one of us to have other revenue streams in our life. Even for CEOs and executives, as crazy as that sounds, for a lot of us, I think that seems like a daunting task, but you've made a career out of generating income through other means. So what are some ideas or approaches for us to generate alternative income streams outside of our day job?
I think the best way is through investing in the stock market. I mean, a lot of companies will pay dividends. And so you can either go the route of just finding an index fund or the S&P or the total market fund, and it will generate a percent or two or slightly higher, depending on, you know, the fund of income in dividends and just other interest payments that can just act as a baseline sort of, you know, safety net for your money. I'm a huge fan of dividend growth stocks. So I built a portfolio of dividend growth stocks. So these are companies that have a history of paying dividends and then growing those dividends over time at a rate that's higher than inflation. And so over time, if you ever look at Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway annual filings or his letters are fantastic to read, because in the beginning he writes it like an essay. And so you're reading and he explains all his businesses, and he's funny. He's quirky funny. So it's a fast read. But then you get to the section about the stock holdings they have, and one of them is Coca-Cola, and the dividend yield he's getting on his hundreds of millions, if not billions, it's likely billions of dollars of Coca-Cola, is some absurd percentage because he's held them for decades and they've slowly grown. The fun part about dividend funds are good because they're mutual funds of dividend growth companies, but of dividend stocks themselves, is that I get to scratch that itch. You know, I'm really, like many other people who may or may not admit it, I'm really bad at picking stocks and picking individual investments. I mean, they're riskier because they're individual companies, but I like the fun of it. I don't know why. And this is a responsible way of picking a company that has a dividend, offers cash flow, that sort of builds this alternate income stream while scratching a somewhat irresponsible stock picking itch.
So let me pick that or parcel that out a little bit more, which is to say that maybe the idea here is to to go with a like a mutual fund or some sort of a fund that is a dividend growth in nature, or is it and or is it going with individual growth dividend growth stocks? I just want to make sure I understand that correctly.
You could do either. I tend to pick the individual stocks because it scratches that stock picking itch. Mm. But going with the dividend growth fund themselves is probably a more responsible way to do it. What? So one of the other things I wanted to touch on about personal finance is, like, oftentimes we try to shoehorn ourselves into a process that we've read about or watched or studied because we believe it's the best way, but it may run counter to our own habits. And so it's really hard to break habits on a dime. And so when you try to integrate someone else's process, you have that very painful experience of fighting through and, like, making mistakes and forgetting. And sometimes you give up. What I try to do is adopt what I like about another process and try to integrate it with what I want to do. So I want dividend stocks, and dividend funds are the more responsible way to do it. But picking stocks is kind of fun, and it scratches that itch. And it is not as irresponsible as if I just threw all my money into Tesla, which is, like, the sexy stock of the day. So I'm kind of in between. And maybe, you know, I've had people ask me, why not a dividend fund? And I answer, because it's boring. I know picking is not the optimal ideal, but it's pretty good, and it's better than buying shares of Tesla. So I just kind of, I please both sides of my brain, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the devil and the angel, they both get a little bit, and at least the devil doesn't get anything too irresponsible.
I like that. Well, conversely, you know, that's an idea for, you know, what we can do with money when we're saving it. Conversely, what's the worst thing that we can do with our saved money?
Try to gamble with it, because those are, I don't know which part of the brain this taps into, but people love gambles. They love hearing the stories. I mean, I have a friend of mine who runs a website that teaches people how to count cards in blackjack. I love his stories, because they're always about how he got backed off from the table, and it's exciting how much money he made, you know, when he first started versus how much he was making near the end, how his team did. I mean, they're very exciting, but they're so volatile, and they're great for stories. They're great for stories for other people to experience them, or for me to, you know, live vicariously through their stories. But there's no need for you to go gamble your money in the stock market and try to pick, like, a hot stock, because the goal of investing is to get returns that are repeatable and that fit into your plan. I'm totally happy putting it into the market, getting 7-8%. Mm-hmm. And just in 40 years or 30 years, when I look back and I say, hey, that was it's going to be a very bumpy ride. But when I look back, I'm like, all right, I got 7-9% each year. I don't have any fun stock market investing stories. I won't be able to say I invested in so-and-so at whatever year and it went up a bazillion percent, but I will have a pile of money that I can retire with and then enjoy my life without the stories. I'll be fine without the stories. Everybody else can tell me their stories.
Well, and on the flip side too, you don't have the story of, you mentioned Tesla a few times, but if you look at what just happened to Tesla recently, their stock just took a nosedive in light of the events with Elon Musk and his whole, you know, in being investigated by the SEC and et cetera, et cetera. So you, on the flip side, you won't have any of those, like, horror stories of, wow, man, I lost my shirt. I lost my life savings, you know, because I put it into this one hot stock.
And the people that are sort of those adrenaline junkies that love the, like, massive gains, massive losses, they don't share when they lose a ton. They only share when they win a ton, right? It's kind of like gambling stories of people like, oh, I made so much in Vegas. It's like, if you were to add it all up lifetime on your trips to Vegas or any casino, do you think you're up or down? Unless you're a professional card counter, you're probably down. That's why their buildings are huge.
Yeah, they're not so standing the test of time because they're losing money. The house always wins.
For sure.
Well, Jim, before we move on to the last part of the show, you know, what else am I missing about money management or achieving financial independence? Maybe something I haven't asked you about yet, but you think is critically important for us.
I mean, I think we talked about it a little bit, about the habits and adjusting. I think we're all working towards our optimal selves, whether it's with money management, our careers, our families, whatever it is. And we have to just work towards being better every single day. And it doesn't mean you have to become the best tomorrow or the day after or even a year or two. But as long as you're progressing in the right direction and learning and, you know, listening to podcasts like this one for ideas, you're going to be fine. But that the yearn to yearn to learn, which sounds
the yearn to learn.
But you have to have that spirit that you want to keep learning and keep growing. And apply that to money, and in a year you'll do a lot better, and then apply it everywhere else.
Well said. Couldn't agree more.
Except for the yearn to earn part.
The yearn to earn.
I start saying it, it's like falling downhill. I just couldn't
get up, man. I couldn't get up from it. Well, look, it's time for my favorite part of the show. This is where we talk about one of the very best habits we can adopt today, and that is the habit of reading. Jim, I want you to think about the books you've really enjoyed over the years, or books that have impacted you deeply. What are the two or three books that stand out for you?
So the one that probably changed my mindset about money the most is The Millionaire Next Door by Thomas Stanley.
Okay.
It's where he interviews a whole bunch of just like regular millionaires next door, just people that saved their money, just lived regular lives. I think until that point, I read it relatively early. When you think of millionaires, you think of, you know, athletes, entertainers, people with flashy lives who have to maintain a brand so that they can also remain relevant and popular. Mm-hmm. And no one talks about the person that started, you know, a very quiet business that everyone needs, you know, like a carpenter or whatever, and just saved their money. So I think that opened my eyes a lot from just a philosophical approach to money. Another one that is relatively recent is called The Index Card. It's by Harold Pollack. He's a professor at the University of Chicago. Hmm. And it all started when he tweeted out a photo of just a simple index card. Was it a 3x5 index card? Mm-hmm. With maybe like a dozen very simple money tips, like save 20% of your income, you know, basic principles. And that blossomed into a book. But it goes back to, you know, when you asked me about experts and who should you listen to, we all know what we should be doing. It all fits on that one index card. It's just a matter of doing it. And so that index card is a good reminder about that idea. And then the third book is one, it's a little older. It's called I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. Ooh. And it's more of a tactical one in that, how do you set up your accounts? How do you automate as much as you can? It's very much like a hands-on how you set things up. And the system, you know, you can take the core ideas in it and apply it to your life. But the idea is just to keep things simple and keep them automatic so that you aren't stuck trying to execute your ideas because your system's so complicated. So you can think more about big picture and the more important things. So those are the three books that I share.
Let me ask a question on that last one. When you talk about setting up systems, is this like setting up systems to automatically save, to automatically invest? I mean, is it something?
It's okay. All that.
Yep. Okay, cool. Definitely check that out. Okay, well, look, final question. What are you working on now, or, you know, going into the future that really excites you?
I'm really excited about Wallet Hacks. I think I had a chance to make a personal finance blog the first time, and with Bargaineering sort of stumbled my way through to success, which is awesome. I felt very lucky. And I think this time I'm going to be a little more strategic about how I'm doing it. Plus the tools nowadays, like you have podcasts, videos, things like that. There are a lot of things to play with. And so I look forward to playing with them and trying it all out.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing new content and checking it out every day. Jim, that's all I have. I just want to say thank you so much for being here today. Loved our conversation. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, for sure. This is a lot of fun. Thank you for having me on.
You can connect with Jim Wang online through his website, wallethacks.com, and on Twitter with his Twitter handle, @wallethacks. All the links and resources Jim and I discussed can be found at the page created just for this episode. You'll find it all at nextyearnowpodcast.com/54. And finally, just a reminder, if you like the show and enjoy learning from our guest each week, please consider giving us a rating and review on iTunes. That really helps us stay relevant and findable by listeners like you. That's it for today. I'll see you next time.